Today it's a departure. It's an interview. It's a special interview with Sean Jackson. Sean is the CFO of Copy Blogger Media. He's a Dallas guy. I recorded this interview late last year. I recorded it for a project that I'm still planning to launch over at Chasing DFW, which stands for Dallas Fort Worth, in case you're interested. ChasingDFWCool.com. But I got tired of sitting on this, so reached out, apologized to Sean, and told him, I'm going to release this thing, dude. The conversation I think you'll enjoy, especially if you are interested in business and entrepreneurship and success. And, well, who's not interested in all those things? Brief introduction, and then we'll get right into it. You can find the show notes for today's episode at Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com/223. There will be links to all of the Copy Blogger products. None of those links, by the way, are affiliate links, just for proper disclosure. Sean Jackson is a Dallas guy, and he is the man behind Scribe. That's how he came to meet Brian Clark, and you'll hear more about that in the interview. And so without further ado, Sean Jackson. Hope you enjoy it. I'll come back at the end and have a few closing remarks.
Well, my name is Sean Jackson. I'm the CFO and one of the co-founders of Copy Blogger Media, one of the largest online content marketing blogs in the world with over 115,000 customers worldwide. So we've been doing this for a long time. And what's nice is the advice that we give out on our blog is the same advice we've been using to grow our company to such an enormous number.
Well, and before we dive into, you know, your current situation, so tell me a little bit about where you grew up. Are you a Dallas guy? Or I know you are now, but
I got to Dallas as fast as I could, Randy.
Yeah, there you go. Me too.
I was born in Houston, and my family is all from Houston. And for most of my life, I went to a boarding school in Austin at a little place called St. Stephen's, and then went to college in Boston University. And as soon as I got out of Boston University, I spent 2 summers in Houston and realized that Dallas was a much better place to be. So I got up here as fast as I could and have never looked back.
And in college, was this the path that you saw for yourself back in college?
I always knew I'd be coming back to Texas, certainly. I originally thought I would be in Houston and working for my father's company, but he died when I was a junior in college, and that very much changed my direction on my future thinking. So after a few years in Houston, I figured that it would be more opportunistic for me to be here in Dallas.
Well, and sorry for that loss, but if you don't mind... So here you are, junior in college. You think you got your career path mapped out. And now what are you thinking?
I'm thinking I have to go get a job. My dad was paying for my college education. And so I had to end up getting a full-time job, working 40 hours a week plus 16 hours of classes so I could graduate on time. So it was quite a shock. I mean, needless to say, but it also, in hindsight, it was a big turning point because it really set a new path and destiny for me than one I was anticipating. So I just rolled with the punches and have not looked back. I've been pretty happy ever since.
Was the finance and accounting kind of stuff that we typically think of a CFO position? I mean, was that your...
Certainly, I was a finance major. So for me, it always was going to be something related to finance. My father was in real estate. He was a big real estate developer in Houston. So real estate and finance very much go together. And so I thought that would be a role and function that I would do. So yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking. And I had always figured that finance would be something that I was going to be involved with.
So in the early days, the 40 hour career, in that, were you in that space? Were you in accounting? And
no, I was a clerk.
Yeah, there you go. So now you get out of college and fast forward to the first real job that you felt had some meaning. What are we looking at?
I worked in investment banking with an boutique investment banking firm down in Houston. And it was interesting because they were actively involved with the RTC back in the early 90s, trying to find buyers for all of the properties the government was literally giving away after the savings and loan crash. So Dallas had a lot of opportunities up here. And since I was the third man on the totem pole, I was sent to Dallas to do all the research and analysis of different Class A properties, that were here. So as soon as I got to this town, I realized, wow, this was the place for me.
Early influences that now that you can look back with some perspective that helped shape your business future, whether it's a business philosophy or just the areas that intrigued you the most, what would those have been?
Very easily. It would have been Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. From a very early time period, I had always loved technology, but I didn't think there was much of a career in it, especially in the early 90s, because quite frankly, no one I knew was actively involved in technology. Everybody was in, you know, the traditional businesses, oil, gas, real estate, and finance. So, but I had always been fascinated by the story of Bill Gates and how he started Microsoft. And Steve Jobs, of course, through the 80s was an icon, but I didn't really know anyone here in Texas that was doing that. So even when I worked in investment banking, I was one of the first people to have a luggable laptop. I was one of the first people to use a spreadsheet analysis for reviewing different deal flow, et cetera. So even back then, I was a technologist at heart, even though I was working in finance.
In that industry, and still, Sean, I mean, I find so many industries today that still seem so far behind the curve when it comes to just taking on technology, particularly online technologies. Certainly. So how far ahead of the curve were you?
I was pretty ahead of the curve, and I really realized that if I was going to be doing complex spreadsheet analysis and minor basic programming, that why should I be doing this for an investment banking company that really didn't care, and decided to go out on my own in 1995 and set up a technology shop. So it was something that I just had a real feel for and a real passion for, and no clue what to do, but knew that I didn't want to stay in investment banking.
And what was the primary business of that firm?
That firm originally started, for the most part, my entire career, because it was this idea of merging technology and marketing together. For whatever reason, I had always felt that technology was underrepresented in the needs of marketing departments. And everyone I would talk to in marketing, when it came to technology things, they were blindsided by it. And so I set up that firm, and it quickly grew, and I was very, very happy with it, primarily because I got GTE as a customer back in the very early, actually within 6 months of starting the company.
Now, how did that happen? Got to ask that.
So I was talking to two people who owned an ad agency here in town, a little small ad agency, and it turned out they were doing some work for a department in GTE. And at the time, I was kind of showing them different technology that I had been involved with, things that I really liked, and one of them was this idea of using your computer to order marketing material or to pull a marketing material from a CD. And they really liked that idea. They took me to their client, who just so happened to run all of the marketing documentation for GTE. I gave them a presentation, and they were blown away because I introduced really wild concepts like PDF files, which at the time, no one there had really understood what they were. And so they got this giant light bulb and said, "My word, you mean we could take these files from these agencies that come to us on computer disk anyway and convert them into a format we can give to others on a computer disk? This sounds like a good plan." So it was really that one client, GTE, that really shaped my entire career, if you will, about this idea of taking technology and bringing it to the needs of people who were in marketing.
Now, were you a one-man band at this point, or?
I was I had a business partner, and we had two or three employees. Again, very, very small shop, but we were able at the time to get a lot accomplished with very little. So from that initial meeting, we ended up doing several different projects for GTE, including automating their entire marketing communication system when it came to document delivery, and that was worldwide. And that project alone took over a year and a half and was really the first time that anyone had gone online to download a marketing document to their computer. And that was, again, very, very, it's hard to believe, but just that entire concept back in the mid-90s was seen as groundbreaking by large corporations. And that project eventually won one of GTE's highest internal awards for innovation.
Well, and I'm certainly old enough to understand the timeline and appreciate it. You know, our listeners may not all be, but yeah, it's these are the incredibly early days of some of that technology. As an ex-CEO, I've got to ask. So we've got a finance guy, and he launches a technology company to primarily bridge a gap that he sees in the world of marketing. I mean, what's wrong with this picture? You know, there's my personal experience, I've not encountered too many, pardon the phrase, bean counters that were all that interested in marketing, other than the results of it, of course, and the cost of it. So bridge that gap for me.
Well, I like to say the difference between an accountant and a finance person is accountants know how to add and subtract, and finance people know how to divide. And it usually comes to the idea that finance people tend to be a little bit more clever about the allocation of resources and money, because quite frankly, that's what you expect of a finance person. It's not just to take the addition and subtractions, the debits and credits, but finding ways to put those into strategic terms. And so it had always been something that had led me to be successful in finance. And more importantly, when I got out there on my own, it was this idea of putting the different pieces and parts together in such a way that made financial sense.
And I've got to believe that early on, and even now, that that's an enormous strength. Am I wrong? I mean, no, you know your peer group better than I do. But in my experience, that's, come on, yes. You're not the prototypical CFO kind of a mindset.
Correct.
That I've encountered.
And I appreciate that. And I take that with a pride insofar as I feel like the contribution that anyone makes to any organization should be their unique, eclectic experiences. And so in my particular case, I think I have a nice eclectic mix of the financial side, the corporate side, the wild hair entrepreneur tech side to bring those past experiences to what I'm working on now. So it is something that I think, you know, just for me and for people that I know, especially my other partners, who all come from eclectic mix of things, we have been able to use them in what we're doing for CopyBlogger.
So you get GTE and you get that within 6 months. Mm-hmm. Quick success by anybody's standards.
Yes.
Serendipitous? I mean,
well, it was something that I worked very hard on, and I still remember to that day, because again, being a startup technology company that was self-funded, I was so successful in those early days, I ended up having to hide my car from the repo guy, and my wife, my girlfriend, it became my wife, was buying me groceries. So when that first GTE check came in, obviously I was overjoyed with the idea of now having a steady pay as opposed to the ad hoc that most startups go through. But yeah, I mean, it was a very big time for me at that particular point, because you had this major company and literally everything that I proposed, they wanted to buy. And that continued on for about 3 years until the original firm that made that introduction saw the money we were making and made me an offer to cash out and join their entity. So 3 years later, from that one, you know, oh my gosh, I hope I can pay my rent, to 3 years later, selling my first business.
And you've just crushed the hopes and dreams of people who thought there was an easy button and you could just, you could just launch and it would all come true.
That's you know, that's what you think when you start with, but reality quickly gets to you when that first bill comes in.
Yes, it does. We'll talk about, before we fast forward to the success. So, I mean, talk about the failures. I mean, talk about the benefits of those failures. And I'll go ahead and show my cards. I mean, I happen to have firm conviction without the adversity and without the failures. I don't know that it's so much a fail fast kind of a thing, but I mean, without that adversity, is it even possible for us to know who we are or what we are or what we can become? I'm not sure. Real sure about it. I mean, I think the adversity helps all of us. Well, if we can get up off the floor from it, for sure. But talk about some of that.
I think that's the difference between an entrepreneurial mindset and someone who's just looking for a paycheck. The reality is that every entrepreneur I know has failed multiple times. And it's funny, we as a class of people do not generally remember our successes. We focus like laser beam on the failures and specifically how not to fail again, and then to find those things that led us to be successful and replicate them. But if a failure goes hand in hand with anyone who takes a risk, and certainly anyone who decides to go out there, start their own business, or inside of a big company decides to make a radical change, to kind of shoot for the moon, you will. So even in some big corporations, I found individuals who really do have more of that independent entrepreneurial streak and will put their reputation on the line for big chances and hopefully gain it internally. But at the end of the day, you're correct. I mean, we are, what we call our experiences are really a list of past failures that we've had. But as entrepreneurial class, I do think that what is the difference is this idea of just not stopping. And I think that's really what I have seen the difference between people who have been successful and people who are not successful, is that when those points of failure come, and they will come, that the people who are not motivated to continue lose the race. They lose. They've been beaten. They're defeated. Everyone else who says, I will get up, brush off, and keep going forward are the ones that inevitably will be the ones who win. And it is this idea of just not stopping. And I am certainly not the smartest person I know, and I am certainly not the most disciplined or tenacious. I can list my inadequacies all day long. But there is one quality that I think I have that many of my peers have, which is this idea of never stopping. And at the end of the day, it's been pretty good so far.
Was there a pivotal failure that you really thought helped more so than the others?
Oh, absolutely. Before I joined CopyBlogger, so I sold my company in 1998 to the agency that initially introduced me to GTE. I worked with them from 1998 to 2003. And then 2003, I went off on my own, started another technology company called Ecordia. And I putzed around that for a few years, and it was really a lifestyle business. It was some software that I had developed that I was selling to some companies here in Dallas. Was making good money, but nothing to crow about. I mean, I was definitely living a good life, but not a great life. And about 2007, I came up with an idea for a product that I thought was going to just change the world. It was a way of allowing people to really blog without having a blog, if you will. And I committed almost all of my, not almost, I committed 100% of my savings at the time, as well as money from family and friends into this business that in 2 years, in 2009, literally crashed and burned. Even though it had gotten customers, it was a major failure because at that time I had hired several employees. I had hired a lot of people, and we had customers coming in, but the business model was not working right from the revenue side because we needed a lot more capital to be as successful as I thought it could be. So in 2009, I was literally on life support. I mean, all your savings gone. You're sitting there going, wow, all my work to this point evaporated, and your reputation, you hope, is not tattered. And yet you still have to keep up. And it was that moment in 2009, and I still remember it, when I met Brian Clark, who was the blogger behind CopyBlogger. And had I not been at such a horrible point in my life when I was truly receptive of figuring out a way to change, would I have ever, you know, pursued that opportunity that I could find with Brian? And that literally crash and burn failure was instrumental in the future success that I had from that relationship.
And how did you guys meet?
So I'd met Brian casually at conferences before. He was a blogger speaking, didn't really give much thought to it. I knew he lived here in Dallas. But in 2009, there was an event in Austin called PubCon, which I was fortunate enough to be a speaker at, and I had also heard Brian speak there. And I heard him speak formally for the very first time, and his speech was brilliant. So after his speech, I came up to him, started talking to him, and asked him to do a presentation here in Dallas to the Dallas search marketing community. Brian agreed to do that. And several months later, he came to an event and he was talking about his blog and what he is doing in online marketing. And I kind of raised my hand at the end of his presentation and said, "So Brian, how do you actually, how do you make money?" And when he told me how he actually made money, lights went off all over the place, because what he had done was take a blog to build an audience, but he partnered with people who had great technology to sell to that audience. And right as soon as he said that, I was like, "I've got a piece of technology I want to show you," which at the time I was working on another piece of technology that I really thought would align with his audience very well. And that's how it happened.
I'm just going to take a sidetrack here. So your interest in the technology, not only just using the technology, but tell me about where this interest was sparked in creating the technology, and how did you have the wherewithal to even do that? Or were you farming this out, or were you partnering?
I was self-taught. So I am, I have enough programming skills to be really, really bad at it, but enough to at least read through code and to recognize good coders. So I've always felt myself a good architect, if you will, of technology solutions. And over the years, self-taught myself to read code, to enhance code. And so when it came time to finding developers, I was not at a disadvantage in understanding kind of the issues they faced, the challenges they had. So over the years, after you build just so many products, you start to get a real taste and flavor for it. And I think really at the end of the day, I'll credit my father with that desire to create something. My father was a major real estate developer in Houston, very, very big real estate developer. And he loved the art of creating something that never existed. And I think that came to me when I was a kid, and even in my professional career, this idea of creating something that did not exist really drove a lot of my passions in technology when I got out on my own in 1995. So that was something that I'd continue to do and absolutely love, because quite frankly, what else besides a few industries can you literally take an idea and manifest it into something that can change, you know, the hundreds of thousands or millions of lives through that creation? And that's something that drove it. And technology was a heck of a lot easier to put things together than manufacturing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you meet Brian, he blows everybody's socks off, at the speech in Dallas, and you approach him?
I approached him afterwards, and I luckily had my laptop with me. And after the meeting, everyone goes to the hotel bar where the event is at, and everyone's sitting around networking, doing business. And I buy Brian a drink and basically start showing, pull up my laptop and show him the software that I've been working on. That piece of software later became what known as Scribe today, which is a very successful product that we have at Copyblogger. But the very, very first iterations of it, I had shown him on my computer about how you could take content and optimize it for search engines and do so in a fairly elegant way. Brian, who is very, very astute at SEO copywriting, immediately saw that his audience would appreciate a product like this. And really from that initial meeting where he said, "I think you have something that we could work on together," I spent the next several months fleshing it out. And finally, in February of 2010, we rolled that product out together. But it was interesting to note that right before we rolled out the product, right in January, if you will, we were still talking about how this relationship was going to work, who was going to get what. You know, at the end of the day, it is about money, and you're going to figure out who gets what. And it was really at that point that I said, "You know what? I will give you 50% of what I just created if I could just partner with you." And Brian, of course, was no dummy, said, "Wow, that sounds like a good deal." And so, and we really were able to define the relationship very, very quickly. And I had no problem giving up control, if you will, on certain items to him. And if I had not been coming from a failure, right? If I had not come from a failure, I may not have been receptive to that particular offer. I may have had an ego. But it turned out that, as in most things, you have to work with people you can trust. And in this case, not only could I trust the guy, but the results of what we've been able to do have been phenomenal. So failure really did lead to that success of being able to work with someone and really be able to put your ego a little bit aside and figure out ways to make money.
Well, 50% of an incredibly large audience is way more than 100% of a really small audience. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Okay. So, and for those that don't know, Brian is a, I don't know, does he still describe himself as a reformed attorney?
Yes, he does. So,
did that complicate the negotiations for this? I don't mean to pry, but I'm curious. No, I would think that might have facilitated it. Yeah.
No, it made it real easy because he was very fair. I mean, Brian Clark started CopyBlogger in 2006 as a blog. That was his blog site. But he had previously been an attorney. He had previously actually been very active in real estate. And so he, you know, had gone through the mill for a while. But he was also a very genuine and good person to deal with. Certainly tough. I will say that Brian is one of the most demanding personalities I've ever had the honor of working with. But at the same token, he's very, very fair and very, very good to the people who work with him. So it was not a hard or laborious conversation. And years later, when we actually formed CopyBlogger Media, the formalized company of what Brian started, that process was really driven through his prior experiences with people like me forming partnerships.
Well, and your timing, because I was a very early follower of, I knew Brian was here in Dallas at the time. He's not now, but I knew that he was at the time and was just, I was paying attention to what he was doing. But, you know, by the time that your paths cross, he's very much sort of morphed into a software guy, a guy that it was apparent to me as an audience member and a person of his, to beg Seth Godin's phrase, a member of his tribe. It was obvious to me. Because of WordPress themes and whatnot, he was really migrating toward the very space that you were in, which your timing couldn't have been better. It doesn't seem.
Yeah, absolutely. The timing worked out perfectly. And it was that Brian was, again, starting to move much more aggressively into software, to see himself in the software and educational services side, and to do so really with that audience that started with a very simple blog site with zero visitors. And I think that was something that really he came to realize the power of, is that he could build that audience. He knew how to connect with the audience. He pre-built the marketing, if you will, for products that had yet to be created. And so as he slowly got in, introducing ideas, products, exchanging money for the things that he was providing, he got really, really good at it, so that when software, specifically in the WordPress space, really started to take off, he was right there and leading the charge and understood how to really give value to the audience that he had built up.
The formation of CopyBlogger Media, what year was that?
So Brian and I partnered together in February of 2010, and he had some other partnerships already. But in July, August of 2010, he went to all of his various partnerships. So there was myself, Sonia Simone, Tony Clark, and Brian Gardner. And he said, look, guys, it would be helpful for me, especially Brian, to have all of us in one company together. So that way we can help leverage each other's strengths to make a much bigger company. So we all flew for the very first time to Denver in late August of 2010. And we had really never met as a group before. So we had gotten a conference room, and within 3 hours, we took all these different partnerships and amalgamated them into what became known as CopyBlogger Media. And I always point to that because I think that's very fascinating when people hear the story, that you could take individuals who had never worked or interacted with each other as a group before, who each had their own business interest with Brian Clark, to bring them into a room together for the very first time, to sit them at a table, and to be able to come up with everything you needed to form up a company, including how the allocation of ownership would be, all within 3 hours, is more of a testament to the guy at the top, which is Brian, and the fact that we all were intellectually aligned with each other because we were fans of Brian's work. And because of that intellectual alignment, we were able to form the company very quickly.
And again, I mean, given my business past, I mean, to me, that's one of the more remarkable things about the whole story, is the number of you and the harmony, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
That seems apparent. as an unsuspecting public member like me, just looking from the outside, I mean, it's truly remarkable.
And realize all of the five founders of CopyBlogger are completely different, with completely different interests, completely different political views, life views, etc. And yet we found something in common that was strong enough for us to build the enterprise that we have today. And that, I think, is something else to learn from this experience has been that oftentimes when we're in business, we seek others that are exactly like us, right? That we share something in common. We went to the same school, we're in the same neighborhood, we have something similar. Right. And I think really that eclectic mix that we talked of earlier is really been kind of the foundation of why CopyBlogger's been successful, because we weren't all the same people. We didn't all act the same. We weren't of the same belief systems, but yet we could take our eclectic mix, our eclectic experiences, and find that each of us was fascinating in our own right. And more importantly, we could center that around an individual like Brian, who is by no means, I mean, a perfect individual, but at the end of the day, he is absolutely brilliant, and he inspires to do great things, because he is somebody who you just want to sit there and say, I want to be much like what this person can help me achieve. I often equate Brian to being very much a Steve Jobs-esque character, simply because he has that magnetism of being able to take different people with different backgrounds and bring them together in a unified cohesion.
And give us the menu of CopyBlogger Media and the offerings for those people that haven't got a clue who you guys are and what you guys offer. Give us the rundown.
So CopyBlogger started as the blog, and then we have from that blog launched five different products. The first product is StudioPress. StudioPress is the largest theme framework in the world in the WordPress environment. So if you own WordPress and you're looking for a design, or you're looking for a stable installation of WordPress, then you are probably using a StudioPress product set, either a theme we create or the Genesis framework, which powers over 2 million blogs worldwide. So StudioPress is certainly one of our largest product lines and is our biggest reach into the WordPress space. But once you have a great design from StudioPress, you probably want to drive traffic to that design. And that's where our Scribe product comes in. Scribe is a product that helps you drive search and social media traffic to that beautiful design WordPress site that you have running on StudioPress. But once you get everybody there, now you got them with Scribe to your site, you got a beautiful design on your site using StudioPress, but you might want to convert them into something, because at the end of the day, it is about quantifying actions on behalf of the visitors. And that's where our Premise product line comes in. Premise allows you to create those great landing pages in WordPress so that you can really capture information and or turn them into a membership system, an email subscription, etc. But all of that is for naught if your website is not working. And so in last year, we launched up the Synthesis web hosting line, which is one of only four premium, premier, high-end managed WordPress hosting companies. And what Synthesis really allowed us to do is to make sure that we had the security, the performance, and expertise in managing fairly large WordPress installations. So Synthesis is not going to be your $5 a month hosting plan. It's a premium WordPress hosting company because, like our customers, we rely on our websites for business. So those were the four primary products in the WordPress space. But the final part is something that Brian has been doing since he started the company, which is the educational product. Today, we have a gateway on our CopyBlogger site that allows you to get a lot of free information, but it also allows you to pay for membership to the Authority system. Authority is a community of online marketers. So that online marketing community has access to a ton of information that is not publicly available to the free customers. It allows you to interact with other like-minded online marketers, allows you access to a lot of the online marketing thought leaders in many different interview or podcast or phone call conversations. And so the educational piece is extremely important, because unless you understand how to do online marketing via content marketing successfully, the products that you buy will not help you get there. You have to be smart about it, and that's what Authority is.
I think it's an incredibly cool story. I've got to confess, I was fully expecting that the real estate angle would somehow be how your path would go. Certainly didn't dream that it would be the technology part that would cause you to cross with Brian. But any parting words of wisdom? And lastly, tell us, I want to ask our listeners to publicly thank you, and Twitter might be an easiest place to do that. But if not, tell us where after your parting thought.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you again, Randy, for the time and opportunity, and truly wish you great success and luck with what you're doing. It sounds fantastic. And like all things, it starts with one step towards great success. I do think that at the end of the day, if there's any message that really came from this interview, it's that to never quit, no matter how rough the road can be. It will never be easy. It will never be something that you will sit back and go, oh, I could do that in a night. You will sit there and have lots of blood, sweat, and tears. But at the end of the day, if you don't quit, then you are much better positioned to take advantage of opportunities that are presented to you. And I can't stress that enough. It's starting the road and then staying on that road, no matter what the hurdles may be, but never quit the process. And if you enjoyed what I had to say or would like to reach out, I'm very accessible on both LinkedIn and Twitter. And on Twitter, my handle is Sean Thinks, S-E-A-N Thinks. So you can reach out to me on Twitter or always check out my profile on LinkedIn.
Thanks, Sean. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Randy.
Good interview, wasn't it? Well, he was good. I don't know how good I was, but that's okay. He was the star of the show. Sean Jackson. Thanks, Sean. Reach out to Sean, by the way. You can hit his Twitter account. There's a link in the show notes. Bula, BULANetwork.com/223. Again, for all the links. I've got other interviews I'm thinking about releasing here. Maybe. I don't know. I still keep trying to just carve out some time to get this Chasing DFW Cool launch. My plan was to have it launched the first of the year. So shows you how far behind I am. Does that happen to you? In my case, I would blame it on procrastination, but that's not really it. It's just been a confluence of things that have hampered me. What's holding you back? You got obstacles? Hey, I got a video for that. If I've not sent that to you, go to the website, bulanetwork.com, enter your email address, and I'll send you the free video. It's about overcoming obstacles. I bet I mention the obstacles that you face. Might not, but I bet I do. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it greatly. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website again, Bula, BULANetwork.com. Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas is where I'm from. So is Sean. All the cool kids live here. This is the Yellow Studio.